I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, I'm just curious what... You know, on these Just the Two of Us episodes, we just open them all kinds of different ways. Sometimes it's just me rambling on with, you know, random stuff like I'm doing right now.
I enjoy the cold opens on the
I know
Just
you
the
do.
Two of Us.
I know you do. Why is that? I'm curious. Is this because it's not because is it because it's not structured or
I do. We talk a lot about podcasts and if for people who have listened to the show for a long time, you'll probably notice that over the past few months, the preamble in the beginning has gotten shorter and shorter. I've had people tell us that we should make it shorter in the past anyway. And I think there are a number of reasons why that has become the case. But I feel like if you've listened to the show for a long time, you don't need me to read my bio and your bio. Right. And if you're just coming to the show recently, it's not so hard to do a little research. Sure. You know, you can just Google our names and you can find out anything you need to know about us. So it started to feel too formal. So I really enjoy the just getting right into it.
Yeah.
And also a lot of it comes from listening to other podcasts. And I tend to like the ones that have the least amount of preamble.
Yeah,
I like the ones where they pretty much just get right into whatever they're going to be talking about. So that's part of it. It's funny. I listen to a lot of podcasts these days, and a couple of them have ads. Uh-huh. And that's fine, especially some of the ones that are from people that came from a different background, that they're a little – that they were sort of famous before they started their podcast. Their podcast became an additional thing for them. But it's difficult listening to those podcasts with ads, especially if it's in the car where it's hard to fast forward without me looking down at my phone and pushing the buttons. I really want to write these people and say, you know, you have a pretty big following. You could just do a Patreon and you can get rid of the ads. Why don't you do that?
Doing a Patreon? What if it's just extra?
The ones that I listen, I'll tell you the two that I listen to that have ads. One is Eddie Trunk's podcast. He does not do a Patreon, and I don't think he can because most of the content. Well, he has two things that I think would prevent him from doing a Patreon. Number one, he's part of Podcast One, which is like the big podcast network that many celebrities are sort of a part of. So I think they pay him, so he's sort of an employee and they make money by running ads. So that's number one. The other thing is, most of the content, this has only been about the past year, he has a Sirius XM show that most of the content from the podcast comes from that show. It's a daily show, but basically he takes one interview from that show each week, which he does five of each week, and that's the podcast for the week. So he would have to work out a deal with Sirius XM and with Pod, so I don't think you're ever going to see a Patreon.
So that's sort of a model that I've seen with radio now, you know, over the air radio. They're taking their shows, whatever the shows might be, you know, like they'll do the afternoon drive time and morning drive time and those kinds of shows, and they'll take that content and stream it, and they'll also put it up as a quote unquote podcast. I've seen a lot of that lately.
I believe if you are a Sirius XM satellite subscriber, I think there is an app, and whenever the show is, usually the shows are live and then there's a replay. And I think once it is live, they will then put it out on the app as a podcast as well. Mm-hmm. So if you can't listen while it's airing or when it replays, you can actually listen to it as you would traditionally listen to a podcast. So that's cool. But he models his radio, I think after radio show after the way that he was doing the podcast. It's just a straight up, you know, hour interview with some rock dude. I enjoy it very much, but the ads are annoying. And especially since he's gone over to Sirius XM, there's more. When it was just Podcast One, it was a a few ads at the beginning. That was it. Now, because the form of the show is that they're taking commercial breaks during the radio show.
Yeah.
So he'll go into that, but then they just play whatever ads for the podcast. So now it stops like three or four times throughout the show and they play ads. And I wish that they didn't have them. It's irritating to hear. And they make a big deal about having, I haven't heard them say it in a while, but they're making a big deal about how, you know, please go and fill out our survey so we can have really, you know, focused ads that you're, you know, would be stuff that you're really interested in. And it's like, okay, this is a hard rock and heavy metal interview show. And it's all car insurance. Yeah. And
you just can say blah, 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 with Geico.
It's like, that's not targeted. That's not, you know, like, give me an ad for an album that's coming out. You know, that would be a targeted ad. That's not everyone has car insurance. That's not targeted.
You're reminding me of one of my pet peeves with Spotify.
Mm.
I think it's pretty well established with our listeners the kinds of music that I listen to. I am not a hip-hop guy. Like, I did listen to some hip-hop in my 20s, you know, and because that's when it was, I felt like there was it was pretty big at that time. You had groups like, and I could be completely wrong, but Boyz II Men would be considered, you know, hip hop R&B kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be R&B more than hip hop.
But you know, that it's interesting to me that the music that I listen to, which lately have been more rock and roll, you know, rock. Rival Sons I've been listening to a lot of and different bands. And then just from them exponentially, I've kind of like found, if I do a artist radio on Rival Sons, I find all these other bands. I've been listening to that. And Spotify never fails to hit me with ads for the latest R&B or hip hop album or straight up pop album.
Right.
You know, listen now to blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, you know what I listen to.
Yes.
At no point did you give me an ad that said Bob Seger is now on Spotify.
You had to send
me an email about that.
It's still money. It's who's going to pay for the ads. That's what it comes down to. I feel the same way about the Kindle ads that come up on your screen. If you have a Kindle Paperwhite, I get all these romance novels. And I think a lot of them are indie author romance novel kind of thing. It's like, all right, obviously this person paid, or whoever, whatever publisher it is, if it's a small publisher, because it's like, I don't read any of that. I should only be getting nonfiction and science fiction and fantasy thing. That should be the only ad I ever get. And I almost never get that. Once in a while I do. You were mentioning Rival Sons and sort of this newer music that is kind of classic rock. I'm going to, on Twitter or Facebook, I will put some videos and I will tag you on them, because there's two bands that I've been listening to that are newer bands that I think you would like quite a bit that are in that vein. The one band is a British band, and they are called Inglorious. And they sound, it's like, hey, these heavy riffs that are Zeppelin-like. But the singer is amazing. He's just this big, burly dude with like long blonde hair and beard. And the video, my wife really got a kick out of the video, because he's just like really performing. And he's just kind of a big dude, like not a skinny rock singer dude, like a hulking Viking looking man. But what a voice this dude has. Just like this big towering voice with a crazy range where he went really. I'm always impressed with a rock voice like that, that gets so high but maintains that masculinity. Because I think a lot of times when you have people, men that sing high, they sort of get into a feminine tone quality. And whenever you have a singer that can get that high while still retaining a masculinity about it, I'm always impressed with that, because I think that's sort of a gift, that kind of voice. I don't think that's something you can practice. So Inglorious is one. The other one I want to tell you about is Snake Charmer, which is kind of a cool new band, but the members of that band were members of Whitesnake. I think a few weeks back I had mentioned this book that I read about Whitesnake.
Yeah.
And if you early Whitesnake, I don't know if you went and listened to any of that stuff, but I would recommend checking it out. Maybe I'll find some clips of it, because obviously everyone knows Here I Go Again and, you know, yeah. Tawny Kitaen doing cartwheels on the Jaguar and yep. all that. And I love all that, too. But the late Whitesnake put out like 5 or 6 albums before that album. And it was a different band other than David Coverdale. The first 5 albums were mostly the same guys, including like 2 dudes from Deep Purple, like the keyboard player and the drummer from Deep Purple. So they were much more of a hard rock, but R&B, blues, you know, it was a much more earthy, gritty kind of sound. So those early Whitesnake albums, I think you would be surprised how much you liked them, because they really kind of fit into your wheelhouse a lot more. But Snake Charmer is a current band, but it's one of the guitar players and the bass player that were in that original version of Whitesnake, but with newer guys and guys from other bands. And it's a record that just came out this year. But again, it's like really soulful, classic rock sounding, but it's new songs. And I love that those dudes, I don't think they make much money doing that. I don't think they really tour. There's this one record label, which I've mentioned before, called Frontiers. They're this Italian record label. And I think both those bands are signed to it. I think the guy's name is Serafino, some really crazy Italian name. And I think he loves all that music. And he gives them just enough of a budget to make the record. And they make it and they put it out. And they might play a couple of dates in Europe. And that's about it. But I think it's great, because especially if you have all the streaming services, there's all this really great music that's out there now by sort of these classic artists or classic sounding artists, and they're still making new music, and most of it's great. Almost all of it that I listen to, I think, is really good.
You know, my brain is stuck in advertising and marketing mode right now for a couple different reasons. Because number one, we're talking about ads, and that always triggers it. There's a thing called endemic marketing. Are you familiar with that term?
I'm not. Tell me what endemic marketing is.
So if you are in the rock and roll industry, you're a rock and roll band. That's how you classify yourself. Then endemic marketing would be finding other bands and targeting their fans with your ads. Okay, that's kind of one way. So another way to explain it is, let's say you're a sports affiliated company and you want to find sports fans to come to your company and buy your product. So endemic marketing would be, you would purchase marketing on ESPN. When you saturate and you think you've gotten everything you can get from ESPN, you go to non-endemic and you start advertising on the Hallmark Channel.
Gotcha.
That's kind of what I feel like is happening on some of these things. It's like they have decided, John, that you are all over the science fiction and fantasy novels. So the romance novelists are trying to get your attention. They're going non-endemic. They're going outside the romance field to try to get you. And something that you have searched is the reason you're getting the ads you're getting.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it also reminds me of like how I follow, or I should say I have recently followed very few people on Twitter. I don't really, usually someone that we're going to have on the show, I'll usually follow them.
Yeah.
And sometimes someone will follow me and they seem really interesting and I'll follow them back. But it's actually very rare that I newly follow somebody. I get followed by a lot of people. I don't think a lot of them hang around too long, because it's a lot of them following me, wanting me to follow them back, and I don't follow them back.
And sometimes you can tell that because they'll follow you, and then a couple days later, they'll follow you.
Yes.
They're trying to get you to auto-follow back, and then when you don't, they just leave.
Right. And that's fine. It's rare that I do, but almost everybody that follows me falls into, you know, 2 or 3 camps. One is science fiction and fantasy authors who are trying to make a name for themselves. That's cool. And chances are I might end up following them back or liking them too, but that's a lot of people, because we do the podcast and because that's in my bio. I also get followed by a lot of these like European progressive rock bands, because I have the words prog rock in my bio. So they're like, this dude likes prog rock. Let's get him following us. So I think that's the thing. They do a search for prog rock. And anybody that has the words prog rock in their bio, they go and follow them. Yeah. That's how it works. So yeah, it's the sort of the non-endemic ones that's the rough stuff, because that's when it's becomes annoying.
And they're trying to broaden their own audience. And I totally get that. Did you know, so Facebook is now considered pay to play for businesses, right?
Uh-huh.
And they encourage people to create pages and then have people like the pages. And then you write a post on a page and hardly anyone ever gets to see it because now they want you to pay. That's just the way Facebook is working now. It's interesting to me. I did a couple of experiments here recently. One of the things you can do now with Facebook is you can take your contact list of email addresses and you can upload that to Facebook and create an ad and target only those people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This brings up a lot of the stuff that we were talking with Rob Reed about, because I feel like we're there.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's happening now. Already.
Yeah. Because you already have, several different companies are playing with machine learning. Google is one. Facebook is another. And this is all fresh in my head because I just came off of a 3-day marketing thing here in Denver called the Denver Digital Summit. And the digital summits, they travel, so they're all over the country. And if something you're interested in, you could certainly go and see this for yourself. But the machine logic and the machine learning they're at the point now where they are looking at everything that you do on their platform, and they're trying to auto-deliver to you what they think you want to see. So as an example, if you go to Google and you search for something, Google assumes you only really want to see stuff nearby. So as an example, John, you and your wife decide that you want to go out to dinner, and you open up the browser on your phone and you search Italian food, which is one of my favorites, right? Italian food. The searches that are going to come up, the results on the SERP page, the SERP, are going to be local first. And it's going to give you a big map. And it's going to show you where everything is around you. Because Google thinks that's what you want. Okay?
Because a lot of times that is what you want.
Because a lot of times it is what you want.
Yeah.
But the problem is they will also look at, in that millisecond before it gives you that SERP page, it also looks at everything else you have ever searched. And if you have searched for Stromboli in the past, there's a good likelihood that it's going to show you places that serve Stromboli in that local Italian restaurant results. The problem with that, in my opinion, is that you can't discover other things because it's feeding you exactly what it thinks you want. I've run into this issue with Google News. I have been for years a Google News person. I like to go to Google News and find news articles that are interesting to me. It's now serving up only what it thinks I want to see. Therefore, I'm only getting one side of the story anymore. I prefer to find out what's going on both sides. I want to know what everybody, or all sides, I should say. I want to know what everybody is talking about and thinking and discussing. I don't just want what my friends are talking about and thinking and discussing, or the people who I may or may not agree with, right? I want more. So the machine learning, I feel, is screwing us a little bit. And it's the same thing on Facebook, right? If I interact with a certain number of people, you, JT, MB, a couple different other, right? Those are the people I'm interacting with. Then Facebook serves their stuff up first, and I may not see something from someone else that would be interesting to me.
Right. It's not to get political, because I don't want to have a political discussion, but I think a lot of where our world, or at least in the United States, has been over the past year or two, is a result of that in some ways, because each side, and wherever you may fall on the political spectrum, this is not to sort of talk about the left or the right. I think, I don't remember years ago there ever being, I'm sure it was depending on the circles that you ran in, but in terms of like the news, I always remember it being very even-handed. You know, mm-hmm. you would watch NBC and CBS and ABC, and I feel like people used to make a choice based on candidates. Like, I feel like they used to really weigh the pros and cons of each candidate. And I think what's happened, because people are fed only what they want, they have, each side has vilified the other.
Yes.
And that's why things have become so divisive here, because instead of sort of judging on individual merits or on issues, it's just, I'm this and that's it. And you're evil.
If you don't agree with me.
If you don't agree.
Yeah.
And I think the way the US election went down was that scenario played out almost comically in a way, because it's each side vilified each other, and no matter who would have won that, it would have seemed that way, you know. Yeah. It would have seemed, and again, not to get into the politics of it, but I do believe that in one hand, I feel like the Facebooks of the world and such realize now, after going through all that, that it's a problem, and I don't know if it's gotten better, but I feel like they feel some sort of responsibility that, like, oh, well, that was a mess. And I think in some ways they sort of see their share of the responsibility for how that happened. And now whether anything's happened about it yet, I'm not sure. But I feel like there's at least been some discussion to try to improve that.
Yeah. And to tie it back into advertising, got a complaint at work because an ad was running on a website that someone felt was offensive to them, to their particular political leanings. We outsource our AdWords, essentially. We have an outside agency that takes all of our ads, and they find the right places, and they do all the calculations. They do all the heavy lifting for us and place those ads in certain networks, you know, Google AdWords, Bing, Yahoo, and they deliver them on these networks and based on keyword searches and based on demographics and this and that. So you can also in those say, I don't want this domain, or I don't want political websites, or I don't want, you know, you can kind of filter out and say, this is just not good. I don't want to be involved in this. You know, keep us off these kinds of sites. And the edict came down. We should not be on this website. This person is correct. We should not be on this website. We don't want our ads on this website. We don't want our ads on politically charged websites. So please filter us out of those. And my question back was, can you define politically charged websites for me? Because it's going to be different for different people, right? And to go to your left-right thing, there are people who are going to go, if you're on Fox News's website, you're a piece of crap. And then there's also going to be people go, if you're on CNN.com, you're a piece of crap. So where do we draw the line? Where do we decide what is or isn't politically charged? Where do we decide where we don't want those ads to appear? And that, I feel like, is a huge quagmire in itself. Like, where do you draw that line? I don't know.
I don't either. And I feel like the way that I tend to just ignore a lot of this stuff. I'm not particularly.
You just keep political. Scrolling. Yeah.
Well, I actually use a plugin on Facebook. What, I don't have Facebook on my phone. I don't have Twitter on my phone. These are productivity, sanity things that I've instituted you know, quite a while ago not to have that stuff on my phone, but I do check it on my computer, and I try to limit my time. But one of the things I use on Facebook is a thing called Social Fixer. It's just, I think it might be a Chrome plugin, or I don't know, it's something. It just takes out all the, it doesn't do everything, but it does a fairly good job of getting the political posts out. So I guess they have keywords that they scan for, and if they're in there, then they just don't show it to you, which I find is helpful for me, at least anyway. Well, what it actually does too is that it only lets you see 50 posts at a time. Once you get to the 50, it'll say you've gotten 50 posts. Maybe go do something. Yeah. Now you can refresh the page and start all over. It's not a big deal. Like if you really needed to do more, but I find that we just do. I mean, that brings up a different issue, but I find that you can just lose track of time, and then when you're done, you're just like, what did I just do? I just wanted to sort of check in and see what was going on, and now it's all this drama or whatever, and I don't feel like getting into any of that. But it's it's a weird time we're living in with all that stuff, because I feel like a lot of folks kind of drive themselves crazy with that. They really, I have a coworker, she was saying her husband is retired, and he sits and he watches the news all day, and he just gets angry and angry and angry. And I said to my coworker, I'm like, well, you know, why does he do that? Like, and she's like, well, he just wants to be informed. I'm like, well, that's fine, but you know what? You could find out about it. You don't need to have this is no great insight. It's the way that news channels and things work now, where they have, a 24-hour news cycle, and they have to have stuff, and it's just going to pump it out. And they want it to be as sensational as possible.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah. So, You don't need, I feel like now you'll find out about the important stuff, you don't need to follow it every second of every day. Even if you just check Facebook once a day, or check your email, or check the news sites, you know, you go through your blogs or whatever, do that one. The important stuff will get to you. You don't need to keep track of it. I realize that may be a naive way of looking at it, but I feel like I'm a happier, more productive person because I do view it that way.
I do still have Twitter and Facebook on my phone. However, I had to uninstall Messenger, Facebook Messenger, because my job has changed. The responsibilities and roles that I have at work has changed slightly. And as part of that, any kind of ad stuff that you do on Facebook, they start sending you messages through Messenger about the ads and how the ads are performing, and, you know, send a little bit more money into this one or do the. And so we run Facebook ads, and we have a outside agency that does some, and then we also boost posts, because the only way to get a business page post actually out to the people who like your page is to pay to have it go out. So I started getting tons and tons of messages from Facebook, hourly messages from Facebook, all in Messenger, saying, you know, this post is performing 95% better than any other post on your page. You should boost it for $200 and you'll reach this many people. And it was getting annoying to, because I have my phone with me all the time, because just in case, you know, God forbid anything ever happens with mom and my brother has to call me or something, I always have my phone where I can see it. And I'll have it on silent, but I can see, like, if it pops up and says someone's calling me. And it was getting really annoying because I would see these things pop up all the time, and it was always freaking Facebook Messenger. So I uninstalled Facebook Messenger, and now I don't see those stupid things anymore. Go ahead.
I was going to say that paradoxically, I actually have started using Facebook Messenger, not because I wanted to, but for a decent number of people in my life, that is the best way to communicate with them. Sure. Some people are just even better than text message. So I don't have Facebook on my phone, but I actually have Messenger on my phone, and I just look at it as another text messaging client. That's the only way I look at it. But it is funny because everyone has their own ways of interacting with what you're about to
say. No, I was going to say, you can also get Slack now, John. We talked about Slack.
Yes, of course, Slack. That's a way to look at it too. I think just like everybody's on Facebook, so they just use Messenger. So, I mean, I've even found that's better than traditional text messaging with some people. I guess they're just on Facebook more than they're on their traditional text messaging thing. Forget email. Email used to be the best way to contact most people. It is for me in a lot of ways still. I feel like I email some people, and I think what's happened is I am very good about staying on top of my email, about managing my email, about, you know, getting rid of the spam. So I am really good. That's probably still the best way to contact me. I know what happens with some people is you email them and it just gets buried in all their other email, and they may have seen it and then it gets buried under their 10 emails and then they forget that it's there. I think that happens to a lot of people with email. So I think in some ways email has, as much as I think it's still the best way for a lot of people, I don't think it works for others, because I think they don't manage their email that well.
It's interesting because, again, at the digital summit that I went to, email is still rated the number one communication method for most human beings on the planet.
Yeah.
And it's a trip, you know, that it's just what, at least the people who are taking the surveys, right? There's always that caveat. The people who are taking the surveys, the random surveys that marketing companies send out and ask, you know, what's the best way to contact you? They almost always say email.
And I think probably from a marketing perspective, it probably still is, because if you get your Amazon email that these are the Kindle daily deals. And this is the, you know, so I still think that is, because I know I buy a ton of books that way by just getting that email and going through and looking, like, all right, look at that one there. So yeah, it's absolutely, I think what you have to do, I think for personal communication, and I think for marketing communication, even being on the other end of it, you have to manage it though. You have to, if you're getting tons of emails from a company that you don't want, like, you have to go and unsubscribe or put it in your, you know, block this out or what have you. Because if you manage it, then it's nice. Like, so at this point, I started really thinking about it a couple months ago, where I really went in and started unsubscribing from a lot of things. And I manage it each day. And so all of the sort of ads that I get, or if I'm on people's newsletters, it's all stuff I want to see. It's all things that I may buy, or it's from people that have really good email newsletters that don't just blast you crap. They may email you once a week or once a month, and it's good information. It's pointing to whether it's a blog post or whether it's something to buy or whatever it is. I want to see it. It's my interest. And I opted in on all that stuff. But, you know, I opted in on other things that after a while I'm like, I don't read this anymore. This is not, and it's nothing. People a lot of times on the other end actually are pretty ethical about it. It's just over time, I'm not interested in that thing anymore. I don't need to see that email every week anymore. Sure. Boom, boom. Because now I actually, because for a time I was, it's so easy to get snowed in by your email. It really is. It's really, really easy to get overwhelmed by it. I'd like to do the same thing, especially with Twitter. I am on it. I post on it a little bit. Facebook too. I go through periods where I post more than others. Facebook I'll look through because there's more people I know in real life on Facebook. But on Twitter, I have to say, it's rare that I look at the feed anymore. And I've done things where I've put in groups together, and that's good.
It's funny that you say that, because I feel like we have flipped from when we started. When we started this show, we talked a lot about Twitter and how much Twitter, we had conversations on Twitter. I find it recently, it's very difficult to have any sort of conversations on Twitter. People just aren't doing that as much as they used to. You will see, I almost want to call it clicks on Twitter of certain people who are just talking to certain people, and that's it. And I don't know. I almost feel like the political thing, the presidential campaign last year is kind of where that started to form and happen. And you had a lot of people who they didn't want anybody who disagreed with them on anything.
Yeah.
And they kind of formed these circles where that's just, you know, I keep calling it bubbles. So you're just in this bubble and you don't want anything from outside the bubble. And that kind of is how Twitter feels anymore. And I'm getting far more engagement in actual conversations on Facebook than I used to.
Yeah, it's just for the way that people like to interact, I find it better, even though I'm not on it that much. But I am on Facebook more than I'm on Twitter these days, because someone will post something, whether it's something serious or something thought-provoking or something silly or even just a video. I find that it's like, then you can comment on it because you have something to add, and then you can, and usually, at least with the people that I sort of hang with on Facebook, it's generally pretty civil conversation, and you know, a lot of it's just joking around, and some of it can be kind of serious.
Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of garbage on Facebook too.
Oh, of course. But you know, I tend to filter a lot of that out anyway. But yeah, I find because posts can last a while, it's better for that. Whereas Twitter, because it is so of the moment, that if you're not on it every moment, that stuff just gets lost. And I find it's just unfortunately not, this sounds bad to say, put it this way, it's not worth my time a lot, because I'll dip in and it's a lot of stuff that I'm not interested in. And it's a lot of, because everyone knows that it's of the moment, you can be a little, I think when people post on Facebook, they tend to think a little bit more before they post. They tend to, not everybody, of course, like you said, there's a lot of garbage on there, but I think they've sort of thought through whatever their point is or whatever their thing they want to share. Whereas Facebook, I think, is more stream of consciousness, you know, where it's, I did this and I did this and I did this. And what about this? And fart, fart, fart. And, but you know, whatever the case may be. So sometimes you can look at your stream, and if you're following a lot of people, it's, and I just look at the Twitter thing on the web. So there's a lot of ads nowadays too. Mm-hmm. So that's now, do you use TweetDeck for Twitter?
I still use TweetDeck if I'm on my laptop. Yeah.
So there's no ads on TweetDeck.
Not on my laptop. No. And then I use the Twitter app on my phone, which gives me ads.
Yeah. So between a lot of stuff that I don't care about and then the ads, I find I look through it for 2 minutes and I'm like, eh. And then I just don't end up looking at it again.
Yeah. So one of the things that I tend to do is when I get home from work, make dinner, and then I sit down with mom, she watches like regular TV, just regular old TV. And, you know, Sunday night, she's watching 60 Minutes. And there was, sometimes I pay attention, sometimes I don't. You know, trying to engage her in conversation doesn't work very well anymore. And but sometimes I'll pay attention to what she's watching. And there was an episode of 60 Minutes where they were talking about apps and the psychology of apps. And this is something I think you might find very interesting, because there was a guy who worked for Google, and he started thinking about this, and he sent a memo around where, you know, he was kind of talking about how we're training people to constantly be checking their apps. And I might be mixing up him and another guy, because they had two guys that they were talking about. But essentially it's how they're sitting down and they're figuring out how our brains work and how we react to positive stimulation. And so the reason that we have to check our apps all the time, the reason we have to check Twitter, especially after we have posted something, is to see, did anybody like it? Did anybody respond to it? We get that sense of you know, good feeling, because someone has appreciated what we have posted. And that's why we check all the time. And he like put this memo out at Google and said, I think this is dangerous and we need to rethink how we're doing this or something. And it was positively received, but they decided not to change anything. And he eventually left and started his own company or something.
Yeah, I've read a lot about this, and there's a lot of books being written about that very thing, and it's the reason why I took that stuff off my phone, because I was driving myself crazy with that exact scenario. Did someone like this? Yeah. Did someone like that, needing that validation? And it's so empty, and it's a bad place to be if you get stuck in it. And I got stuck in it, and
because the flip side is, if no one likes it, no one commented it, depression.
Yes. Yeah, it's shallow, and what's weird is, I think you and I, as we were talking about with Rob Reed a couple episodes ago, or last episode, when, you know, we got on this to, you know, try to get the word out about the things that we did, about books and music and all that kind of stuff. But now everybody's on, and everybody's doing their thing, and everybody needs that validation for whatever. You know, they're not trying to do it, they're just living their life, but mm-hmm. they're trying to get some sort of validation for putting a funny picture up or for whatever. And that's fine. And we all, and I think there's a lot of upside to it. But as you said, look, these companies, whether they're nefarious or not, and you can have a whole discussion about that, they want to make money. And how are they going to make money? By running ads. And how do those ads make money? By having a lot of users who are mm-hmm. engaged with it all the time.
Yeah. Because so there's a thing called impressions.
Yes. So they're going to make their product and their apps so that you are on it as much as possible.
Yes. Yes. So part of that story, and I can't remember if it was this guy or another guy, someone created an app called the Zen app and put it in the app store, or submitted it to Apple to be put into the app store. And the concept behind it was that whenever you tried to open a social media app like Twitter or Facebook, Zen app would come up and give you a few moments of Zen to make you like calm down and just, you know, relax a little bit before you went into whatever the app was. The idea being that that would kind of center you a little bit, and then you wouldn't be going into the app with all those feelings that we're talking about, like, oh my God, did someone like it? It gives you kind of a second to, or 5 seconds or something like that, to just Zen out before you went into whatever the app was. And Apple rejected it and said no. And they went back and said, well, why? You know, and they said, well, we are not going to approve anything that keeps people from accessing their apps whenever they want to and as much as they want to, because that's the business that they're in.
Right. Of course. And it might have even been the same guy, because it's in this book, and I haven't read it yet, but I have it in my queue. The Steve Jobs got interviewed once around the time the iPad got released, and the interviewer was like, well, like, do your kids like using the iPad? Because he had like youngish kids at the time. And his response was, my kids aren't allowed to use an iPad. Like, he's like, you know, they can read books and they can do other things, but I don't let them use that. Because they knew. Yeah. They knew that this is this addictive thing that we're going to, and they knew it wasn't good. So that tells you a lot when the people that are making money on it don't let their kids use it. So that is a very telling thing. Well, I think that's a good length episode there, I think, at least anyway. Well, everybody, Patrick, anything you want to tell people about before we start wrapping it up here?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good too. You know, we're in a good place. Patrick, go buy Patrick's book. I'm actually not really performing or do it, but I am doing more music these days. I'm practicing a lot these days. I don't suspect you're going to hear any songs out of me anytime soon, but I've gotten back into music more than I've been in a while.
Good.
So that's good. But so things are good here. Everything's rolling, and awesome. We're rolling with the podcast. I feel like we've had some, I know I do the booking, so I'm just sort of complimenting myself, but I feel like we've had a nice run of shows.
We've had a great run of shows.
Pretty cool guests lately.
So deserve to compliment yourself. It's been awesome.
I feel like different points of view, some really fun guests who have some really interesting things to say. So I think we're in a good place these days. So very good. All right, everybody, have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Stop.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.